Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers, he is calling me Dude!
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 8 of Dudes on Hockey. We talk about the Sharks, but this week is Media Criticism Week on Dudes on Hockey, where Doug and I are going to be talking about some articles maybe that we agree with or disagree with. We're going to be talking about various media things to talk about in the world of hockey and the world of the San Jose Sharks, because frankly, there's not a whole lot going on right now. So we sort of have to make up things to talk about.
We did sign right wing Ryan Vesey today.
Like I said, we have to make up things to talk about.
This guy played in the Finnish Elite League last year, Mike. Did you?
No.
Then let's give Ryan Vesey some credit here.
Good.
He's going to look great in the ECHL.
You will look fantastic. Fantastic. Maybe he'll make the fourth line for the Worcester Sharks.
I think he's going to be a punching bag for Jody Shelley in the preseason. Now just stand here, Ryan.
He's going to be Logan Couture's sparring partner.
Close your eyes.
I mean, not Logan Couture.
Logan Couture's sparring partner.
Concussion. I meant Fraser McLaren, excuse me.
There you go.
Okay, thank you. But we're going to be talking about some various articles that have come out, and we are going to get to your emails near the tail end of the show. And if you want your emails on the air, we are in the quiet period of hockey, so make sure to send us your questions if you want us to talk about something. The email address is questions@dudesonhockey.com. So let's start off the top of the show. Something that I read on HF boards, there's an article on SI.com where people were talking about our face of the franchise, Jumbo Joe Thornton, and this guy, Alan Muir of SI.com, intimated that he didn't think Joe Thornton should be considered for the 2010 Olympic team, the Canadian Olympic team. And let me read one particular quote. "But there's something about the way he works his magic on the perimeters that tells me Canada has better options in a short tournament requiring as many good bounces as it does skill. And you create those bounces by going hard to the net, not noodling around the half boards where Thornton seems most comfortable." So, Canada always has the deepest Olympic hockey team. Canada has the most storied history of hockey. So, what do you think about this question, Joe Thornton? So who's Canada going to take instead of Joe Thornton? You know, there's so many Canadian centers out there, but why would they leave Joe Thornton off this team, and should they?
They're not going to leave Joe Thornton off the team. I think that this guy for Sports Illustrated is just as bored as everybody else and is trying to find something to write about so other people are going to be talking about it. This is a joke.
Right.
And to say that Joe Thornton shouldn't be representing Canada in the Olympics in 2010, and you know, he's one of the best players in the NHL, he's one of the best players in the world, and for him to be left off the team, and also the criticism of Joe Thornton not being a big game player, to me, I find to be overblown. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think you got the stats on playoff appearances, you know, how he does points wise in the playoffs. Points usually go down in the playoffs, and Joe is not, he's not invisible in the playoffs. He certainly wasn't this past year. And the fact is the guy scores 100 points a season in the NHL, which is the best league in the world. How can you leave a guy off your team that scores 100 points a year on? And one guy on HF boards brought up this point, Olympic ice is bigger ice. There's going to be more ice for Joe to work in. So why wouldn't you want a guy that can take advantage of open ice and make that amazing pinpoint pass? Why wouldn't you want him on the ice in a situation like that? I mean, it's not going to be tighter play.
You want him on the ice, and Joe's a point guard, all right?
Right.
To use a basketball analogy on a
Boo.
Hockey. Sorry, dude. Go Warriors.
Boo.
But Joe's a point guard. And if for people to talk about how he doesn't play physical enough, he's not a bruiser, he doesn't use his size, that's not his game.
No.
And that's not who he is. That's why the Sharks re-signed Ryan Clough. That's why we have other players who are supposed to be performing that role on the Sharks. And he's arguably the best setup man in the NHL. That's why he's always in the top three in assists if he's not leading the league. And, you know, you look at his if you look at the NBA, you're not going to ask Steve Nash to go guard, you know, Carlos Boozer in the in the post. I mean, that's stupid.
Are we done with the basketball references?
I'm sorry, but it's the best comparison I could come up with. That Joe's, that's not his role on the team. And for people to criticize his playoff stats, I've got some numbers to throw at you here, Mike. 30 points in 35 playoff games with the Sharks. That's 0.85 points per game.
Yeah. Okay. It's good.
He's won three playoff series in three seasons. It's not like he's the kiss of death and a total choker compared to, say, Marian Gaborik, who hasn't won a playoff series since 2002, 2003. And I don't see people complaining about Marian Gaborik. I see articles talking about how he might make $9 million a year for a guy who averages less in the playoffs, 0.75 points per game, 22 points. He had 1 point last year, 1 point in the series against the Avalanche. Now, of course, they're game planning for him, but he wasn't Superman. He couldn't carry the team on his own. There's only so far you can take a team on your own. And, you know, these guys need help.
I know. And the point I brought up on HF boards, which I think is worth repeating, and that's something that I think a lot of fans sort of bust into. They look at Joe's physical stature and they say, the guy's 6'4 and 230, and he should be playing huge. And the fact is, you said it already, I'll say it again, that's not his game. And just because he has the size to mix it up in the corners doesn't mean he should. I mean, the guy scores 100 points a year. It's not like he's doing a lot of things wrong over here. I mean, he can protect the puck better than almost anybody in the NHL outside of Jager, in my view. I think Jager protects the puck, maybe Forsberg, but Forsberg's not well anymore. Who can protect the puck better than Joe? Nobody. He uses his body for that purpose. He doesn't use his body to go and like hit people in the mouth necessarily. But the fact is he enjoys a lot of success, and for us to second guess that, I think is a mistake. It's a mistake. So yeah, this guy's making up stories. He's got things to talk about. Thanks, Alan. We got something to talk about. But
my question to you, Mike, is if Joe Thornton's considered to be a failure, isn't Matt Sundin a failure?
Right. Yeah. I mean, how many playoffs?
Matt Sundin should not play in the 2010 Olympics, Mike.
Yeah, he should be off the team.
He should be off the team.
Yeah, Doug Murray should take his place on the Swedish team.
Speaking of,
that's a segue for you, my
Thank
friend.
Thank you. Well, nicely done. As smooth a pass as Joe Thornton from the half boards, Mike. Very nice. And I'm not going to bobble it like...
like you just
like
did.
Like a Lucas Kaspar, who is back with the team. Thank God. We've got another article here in our favorite hockey magazine, The Hockey News.
Absolutely.
Written by Mr. Ken Campbell, who I enjoy his writing, and I enjoyed this article too. I just think it's an interesting article. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it talks about the free agent class of 2009, mm-hmm. which we're already pathetically
talking about it.
Taking a look at. And, you know, it doesn't have the splashy headliner names that, you know, were
that we saw this year.
That we saw this year, and that, you know, teams are locking up these players. The Sharks locked up Joe, kept him off the market. Penguins are not going to let Crosby and Malkin taste the market.
Mm-hmm.
Ovechkin didn't get to test free agency. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to. Mm-hmm. I mean, made a ton of money staying where he is and isn't in the position that, you know, Hossa will be in again next year, and that it looks like potentially Gaborik will be in. But we're not going to talk about the forwards. We're going to talk about the defensemen, because the article has a giant picture of Douglas Murray,
mm-hmm.
and this is how it opens. Have patience, make a fortune. If I'm Douglas Murray, I'm walking around the streets of my hometown, Bromma, Sweden, these days, with a notably enormous spring in my step. Forget about trying to figure out how a guy named Douglas Murray can possibly be Swedish. He'll kick your ass for saying that, by the way. Instead, that's not in the article. That's my comment. Instead, attempt to get your head around the notion that by this time next year, there's a good chance Murray will be making in excess of $3 million a season.
Right. Yeah.
Mike.
Hello.
Murray making $3 million a season. And the article goes on to talk about with all the signings that happened this year, mm-hmm. Jeff Finger, 3.5, doesn't Douglas Murray put himself in a position to be making that kind of scratch? So I looked at what I think is the top 12 unrestricted free agents in the defensive category next mm-hmm. year.
Next
and here's
year.
The list I came up with.
Okay.
In no particular order right now.
Okay.
Jordan Leopold of the Avs.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Komisarek, but I don't think he's going anywhere. He's right. going to be. So he's not counting.
We'll leave Komisarek out.
Derek Morris, Phoenix.
Okay.
Matthias Olund, Vancouver. Zuboff's going to be unrestricted. We're leaving him out because I don't think he's going to be on the market. Francois Beauchemin, Anaheim. Matteo Schneider, currently of the Ducks, but I'm sure going to be somewhere else. Nicholas Havilland of the Thrashers. Philippe Boucher of the Stars. Jay Bouwmeester of the Panthers. Daryl Sador of the Penguins. Hal Gill of the Penguins. And Philippe Kuba of the Lightning. And then our very own
Douglas Murray.
So, Mike, of those names that I just listed, where, who's your number one, and where does Murray fit into this for you?
Okay, so my number one is a name that we've heard a lot this offseason, and that's Jay Bouwmeester. So Jay Bouwmeester is a young player. I think he's 24, 25 years old for Florida. He took a one-year deal. He's going to be making big bucks next year. I don't know what kind of bucks that's going to turn out to be because it's kind of hard to say, but I mean, I'd say, you know, in the $6 million range, he could be making.
I think he's going to make more than that.
More than that? You think he'll make $7 million?
If Wade Redden got 6.5?
Yeah, that's the number that everybody's going
to
be working
for. And of this list, to me, it's not close. It's Bouwmeester.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, the clear cream of the crop. And then some major question marks on this list. I mean, Bouwmeester, I think,
So let me do my ranking here.
Okay.
So I don't have everybody ranked here. Bouwmeester number one. I have Beauchemin number two. I think Beauchemin is a very overlooked piece of the Ducks' success. Because they have Schneider and Pronger, the fans may overlook him, but other people, like people who know about hockey, do not. I mean, this guy, he's only 28 years old. He's good for some points. He's a strong defensive player. So I think Beauchemin's number two. I think Olin's number three. He's a little bit older. He's over 30. He's going to be 32. He's good for 30 points a year and 80 penalty minutes a year. I put Derek Morris around. So now we're sort of getting, so that to me, the top three are sort of above and beyond everybody. Then we sort of have the second group. In that group, I have Morris, Kuba, Havilland, and Leopold, and maybe Murray. In sort of that second group. Murray doesn't have a lot of... He's only going to get 10 to 15 points a year. He's good for 100 penalty minutes. He's a big kid, but I put him sort of in that second tier of guys. And then sort of near the end, then we start talking about guys that have... that are pretty old. So we're talking Schneider and Sador, who didn't really play in the playoffs for Pittsburgh, and Hal Gill. So that's sort of... So you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I think you have Hal Gill ranked pretty low. For me, I think you can't. I mean, people pay for 6'7", 250, and the guy's a career plus 58.
Look at Darian Hatcher and Rathje.
Sure, but I mean, this guy was logging pretty decent minutes on a team that went to the Stanley Cup. I think he's proven that. I think Gill is going to make $4 million pretty easily. Although, you know, the market's weird, and is he going to have the Jason Smith factor where, you know, because of age, you're not willing to put out that kind of scratch? But isn't Hal Gill the same as Mike Commodore? I mean, we're not going to get into that. I think we're about in the same. You know, I have Philippe Boucher as my second, just right ahead of Beauchemin, because Boucher at 36 is still pretty damn productive.
That's true.
When he's healthy, can get you 50 points, 80 penalty minutes, career plus 51. I mean, this guy, I think, you know, could get a two-year, $12 million deal from somebody.
So let's get back to the question at hand. So should Sharks fans prepare themselves for the fact that Douglas Murray will be making in the $3 to $4 million range next year?
I think it's very possible.
Yeah, I think it's possible, too. I think this article sort of opened my eyes to that. I don't think we think of Douglas Murray as even being in the ballpark, but he could be making more than Christian Ehrhoff next year.
And if that's the case, it's not going to be on the San Jose Sharks.
You think?
I don't think there's any way that you can justify, at least to me, at this point right now. Now, this is without the season being played out, obviously. And, you know, Murray's had one good year, one.
Mm-hmm.
And this year...
And he's 28 years old.
He's 28 years old.
He will be 28, yeah.
How is he going to be used this year? Is he going to be... You know, like, you know, Wilson was at the end of the season playing Murray with Campbell on the top defensive pair.
Right.
I don't think that's going to happen this year. If he's buried on the third pair, then is that worth $4 million?
No, because, you know, people are going to sort of use last year as, okay, where can he go from last year? So last year is going to be the barometer year, and this year is going to be to set the trend line. Is he going to be better or worse the next year? And if he doesn't manage to scratch his way into the lineup every night, and he, or if he's scuffling for time with McLaren and Lukowicz, then we could see Doug Murray sort of getting what we may have expected, which is sort of in the $1 to $2 million range. But if he manages to get himself into the lineup every single night and he scores 15 to 20 points with 100 penalty minutes, then yeah, he's going to be making $3 million.
So my question then is this: is it to the Sharks' advantage to play a little dirty pool here and
sit him on the ride, well, ride the pine? I mean, is that
well,
what you're saying?
I'm not saying intentionally bench him. I think the Sharks are in it to win it, like we talked mm-hmm. about, and they're going to put the best team on the ice. But right now they've got 7 guys who are legitimate top 6 defensemen. Is Murray maybe the odd man out? Salary cap be damned for the moment, because
we have a question on that later in the show.
Is Murray the odd man out and thus sort of putting his price down? Or do you trade Murray now with maximum value and not have to deal with this problem later?
Oh, he's not making enough this year to really solve some salary cap issues. So I think you have to trade him for value. You don't trade him for salary cap. What about the third option, which is the Sharks see how he does early in the year and then try to lock him up to an extension before he gets to be a UFA? I mean, if this article is right and he says, I'm definitely going to test the market, maybe that's possible. But maybe he might, fall prey or see the wisdom in what a lot of other Sharks players have done, and that's sign an extension here.
Sure. I mean, if he's going to be a team guy, I mean, that's the question. You know, is he going to be a team guy? Is he going to go for the money? You can't really blame him if his agent's telling him, hey, Jeff Finger got 3.5. Yeah. You could get 4 million, but it's a gamble. He could go out there and he could get, Kurt Sauer type money, which he only got 1.75.
That's more than he's making now. So, actually, now that I think about it, I think the chances are better than even money that he's going to be hitting the free agent market next year.
I think so, too.
I think better than even money. So, interesting question. Interesting question. Let's go on to the emails. We have 2 this week. Thanks for the emails, guys. Let's go to the question that was apropos to the issue we were just talking about from our friend Scott in San Jose. He says, since Mike is an amateur salary cap geek, I was hoping you could explain the Sharks' current situation. Now that Klo is signed, we are over the cap. How do we get under the cap? And what are all the options the Sharks have open to them? What are the penalties if a team can't get under the cap? So the last question, what the penalties are, we've addressed on previous shows, and the answer is, we frankly don't know. It's never happened before. And so there's a lot of options open to the NHL, including docking picks and invalidating contracts and things like that. Frankly, we just don't know. I don't think that's going to happen. Probably it'll be some sort of fine and something else, but I don't think we're going to see it this year. I think the Sharks can get under. So let's talk about their options. The buyout period is passed. We've talked about that. So the Sharks cannot buy out any of their players. But what they can do is they can trade. We've talked about that in previous weeks. Kyle McLaren, obviously, he's making a couple million bucks, $2.5 million. He could be traded. Other players could be traded. That relieves cap pressure. You can waive players. Waiving players means that you sort of release them to the field. When you waive them, that means any other team can assume their contract. And if they do, it's off your books. If they are waived and they're off the roster, they're not under the cap, but the team still has to pay their salary. So that would be sort of hardball. That would be a desperate measure by the Sharks to, say, waive Kyle McLaren. It's also viewed,
what's the difference between waiving someone and buying someone out, Mike?
Well, buying someone out means that you take a limited, the team has to pay less money. So that's the thing. So the two differences is that the contract is over. The team pays less money out of pocket, and the team also takes a smaller the team does take a cap hit, but it's spread out over longer time, and it's also lessened along with the money they pay out.
So if the Sharks waive Kyle McLaren, is that sending him outright to the AHL, or is that just releasing him completely from his contract?
They can assign him to the NHL, but for that process they have to waive him,
right?
So yeah, they could take him to the NHL, but he can, he could refuse to appear, and which we've seen other players do, and then they can suspend him. And there's this whole rigmarole there. But I think the chances are the most likely situation is that the Sharks are going to make a trade, frankly, because I don't think there's really anybody right now that we could send to the minors, or really anybody that we could waive that would really make a lot of sense. I still think a trade, we're going to be seeing a trade, Sharks fans. I think that's those are really the two avenues, trade and waiving players.
that, Wa- that waivers we have. Isn't really, I don't think that's Doug Wilson style. I mean, he
no,
did,
it's not.
Although he did it to Patsold last year a couple times,
but he cleared,
but he cleared. But he, also, I mean, that was to get him off the roster.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
sure.
so he's not, you know, above doing that. But I don't think he'd do it
with a guy like it's one thing to waive a guy like Dmitry Patsold. It's another thing to waive an NHL veteran like Kyle McLaren.
Sure, absolutely.
So that's totally two different things. But the situation.
McLaren.
It's going to be uncomfortable. I mean, there's going to be an uncomfortable situation for the Sharks organization and for us as Sharks fans over the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt in my mind the Sharks are going to have to do something. And they're not going to put themselves at the whim of the NHL and say, no. You know. Because then they won't have any flexibility during the season either. So
something will happen.
Thanks for your question, Scott. Let's go to the next question from our friend Ivan Makarov. He says, this week's question is about our division. Will the Pacific Division be the toughest division in the NHL this season? And can any other division even come close? I have my eye on one particular division other than the Pacific Division. I wonder if you have your eye on the same division as me. I don't know if it'll be as tough as the Pacific, but...
I think it's as tough as the Pacific.
I think so?
I think it's tougher. And it's the Atlantic.
Right. Okay, good.
Yeah.
We agree.
I mean, you've got the Devils, the Rangers, the Flyers,
mm-hmm.
and the Penguins.
Right.
You know, you could make a case that, you know, they are the top four teams in the Eastern Conference.
You could get,
Montreal, top four out of five.
You could say that.
You could make a case for that. And you look at, to me, I looked at it this way. The worst team in that division is
the Islanders.
Mm-hmm. And the worst team in ours
is the Kings.
So if they had to have a hot oil wrestling match, who comes out on top?
Maybe the Islanders.
The Islanders. Yeah. They're a better team right now than the Kings. They are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the Islanders are going to be able to steal more games from or be a tougher opponent for those teams to play, then I think as much as unrest as there is on the island, like that's a tougher division.
Not that
the Pacific is easy.
Yeah, the Pacific is the only division in the NHL last year where we had two teams over 100 points. So that's an interesting stat. I think that might actually again be the case, but I think the chances of the Atlantic having two 100-point teams is pretty damn good. So we saw teams get better in the Atlantic. I think they're going to be running pretty neck and neck. If Dallas can keep up their winning streak and their sort of surprising streak in both of our view, then the Pacific could again be sort of the toughest in the NHL. But if Dallas slips a little bit, and I'm predicting that they might, then I think the Atlantic will be the toughest in the NHL. Thank you for that question. That's an interesting question. Okay, so let's talk about something that may have been popular last week. Actually, our numbers were up last week. We had a good listener number last week, dude. And it may have been because of our trivia segment. So if that's the case, let us know. Questions at dudesonhockey.com, because we always want to know what people like, and then we'll be happy to sell out and do whatever it is. You know, we can't do the naked wrestling thing on the radio, although we may try that in later shows.
No one would be interested in that.
Okay, let us know anyway. But I do have a correction on one trivia question. I posed a trivia question to Doug last week about who has the most points as a defenseman in a Sharks uniform. I said the answer was Marcus Ragnarsson. The answer was, in fact, Brad Stewart. So, dude, you were right, and I was
wrong. That's right.
It's actually crazy. Marcus Ragnarsson and Brad Stewart have the same number of regular season points, but Brad Stewart actually has more playoff points as a Shark than Rags. So that is the tiebreaker. So that's a tough one, and I got it wrong, you got it right, so congratulations to you, dude.
Thank you, dude. I've got some trivia for you.
Uh-oh.
It has to do with the San Jose Sharks.
Oh no.
And career leaders in statistics. Okay.
Oh boy.
So
okay.
I think you're gonna do good.
I hope.
We like a good fight, don't we, Mike?
We certainly do.
Who is the Sharks career leader in penalty minutes?
Oh God, Jesus.
So, this person has over 1,000 career penalty minutes as a San Jose Shark.
Okay, so that means we have to talk about longevity. So who was a fighter for the Sharks for many seasons? So we're talking Scott Parker. I know there's a guy. It's got to be a guy in like the late 90s, right? Am I right?
No comment.
God damn it. No hints. Who am I missing? I know I'm missing somebody. I would say Brant Myers, but I know that's not right. Dodie Wood.
Is that your guess?
That's my guess.
No.
Oh.
The answer is...
Yeah?
Jeff Odgers, Mike.
Jeff Odgers.
Jeff Odgers.
Crap.
Now, who's number two with 934?
Okay, so since I said Dodie Wood, I know that's not it. So, 934. I'll go Owen Nolan.
Correct.
Thank you.
Correct.
Nice.
Let's go for the trifecta here, who's number three.
Oh, God. How many?
706.
Okay, so that's quite a bit fewer. Let's see. Oh, man. Who are we talking about here? Oh, man. I'm dragging the show down, aren't I? Let's go with... I'll go Dodie Wood again.
Brian Marchman.
Brian Marchman. Okay. I knew that was the guy I was thinking of.
Next question.
Okay, okay.
All right.
I suck. One for
which
three.
I'm going to give you three choices here. Okay. Multiple choice.
Okay, okay.
Which one of these players has the highest average of penalty minutes per game okay. in a San Jose Sharks uniform?
Okay.
The correct number is 6.7 penalty minutes per game that they appeared in.
Nice.
Is it Dodie Wood?
Okay.
Link Gates?
Oh.
Or Brant Myers?
Wow, wow. Three heavyweights with hardly any hockey skill between them. Oh, wow. Link Gates would be such a great answer. Brant Myers, Dodie Wood. I'm going to go... You know, Brant Myers was with the Sharks so little time, I'm going to go with Brant Myers.
Incorrect.
Oh,
Link Gates.
Damn!
Okay, last part of the question, Mike.
Okay, okay.
Of those same three players,
mm-hmm.
which one... has the most goals scored in a San Jose Sharks uniform.
Oh, I'm so dead. I mean, this is... I might as well throw darts now. Do I have a coin here? I can
the answer is eight. Eight goals. Eight. One of them scored eight.
Eight goals. I'm going to go Link Gates.
Dodie Wood.
God! Man, do
Link Gates had six. He had six goals. In 48 games. Unbelievable. That's it, dude.
How'd you do on the Sharks trivia? Sharks fans, let us know. There's no news in the world of hockey. We're not going to do the shootout this week because what are we going to talk about? Matt Sundin again? I'm tired of talking about that guy. So we're done. Thanks for listening to Dudes on Hockey. You can find us on the web at dudesonhockey.com. You can read our blog at sharks.hockeyanalysis.com. And tune us in again next week, Wednesday, same time, same place.
Dodie Wood.
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.